This newscast was pre-recorded early this week because the news team is out of town for a journalism conference. Improved internet bodes well for location-neutral workers in Haines. And with the deadly bat disease spreading, Southeast residents are asked to help with citizen science. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories up next. A number of Haines residents make a living with location-neutral jobs. For many of those people, a reliable internet connection is essential for their work. So in January, when Alaska Power and Telephone rolled out new internet packages following its Lynn Canal fiber optic project, internet-reliant workers were paying attention.
I'm Gene Cornelius in Haines, Alaska.
And we are at your home office, would you say?
I would call this a home office, absolutely. That's my kitchen table, but there's no kitchen involved. It's covered with gear. Two HD monitors. There's a 5K monitor, a laptop that's usually cranking out raw video.
Cornelius is a stock footage videographer. He films everything from sunsets to trucks driving by and hopes someone creating an advertisement or documentary will pay a few hundred bucks to use his clips.
What'd you just type in?
Slow motion eagle. This was a lucky, lucky shot. In Homer, there is an eagle sitting on a dumpster.
You don't see the dumpster in the clip, just the eagle. It looks to the camera and then flies away in slow motion.
This particular clip has sold 39 times.
For every clip like this that sells well, there are a lot that no one buys. That's why, for stock videographers, quantity is important.
You have to constantly be putting more media up. It's called feeding the beast.
And that has been one of Cornelius's biggest challenges in Haines. Uploading video from the camera to the computer takes time with any internet connection. But here, upload speeds are more limited. When Cornelius heard AP&T's newly installed fiber optic cable would improve internet packages in the Upper Lynn Canal, he had high hopes. Then the company announced the details.
I was a little bit livid.
The new offerings significantly increased data caps and download speeds, but upload speeds stayed the same at 1 megabit. Cornelius says it does make sense that they focused on download speeds because that's what most people use internet for, streaming video, not uploading it.
We are a society of consumers. I mean, here I am making media, but I also consume it.
Cornelius was upset at first, but he says AP&T has been working with him. Later this year, they're going to install a new modem at his home that he says should double his upload speeds. While Cornelius wasn't thrilled with the new offerings, other internet-reliant workers in Haines have been satisfied.
It was just a breath of fresh air for us.
Andrew Del Preti is a web developer who works for a Texas-based company. His job is somewhat related to what Cornelius does. Del Preti works on websites that host stock music and video. A filmmaker can search for, say, pop music and comb through stock clips like this.
So you can search by, you know, different genres. You can also pick instrumental or non, you know, or just lyrical or.
Del Preti says with his old internet package, the data cap was an issue.
And so I was going over my internet cap every month. We had the highest plan of like 8 megs down, 1 meg up at 80 gigs a month. And we were pretty much going over that every time. And so that really kind of put a burden on finances and also just, you know, didn't allow the kids to watch Netflix or for us to do extracurricular stuff, you know, on the internet other than me working.
When AP&T rolled out new packages in January, Del Preti's speeds tripled and the data cap increased exponentially. Now he's able to video conference with his colleagues in Texas without worrying.
You know, I think having faster and more reliable internet will be able to bring a different type of person here that might not be able to make it doing kind of the traditional things, which I think is great as well, and I hope that continues to grow. But I think that having this is another way of bringing people in.
James Albaro, a web designer based in Haines, agrees.
The speeds are faster. the price is lower. I think anyone who wanted to move to Haynes to do the kind of work I do would have no problem doing it.
Albaro says people moving from the lower 48 to Haynes may still have sticker shock when they see how much internet costs.
But, you know, we live in the middle of nowhere. So having service that's so enabling us to function is, to me, is a win.
Attracting more location-neutral workers like Albaro, Del Preti, and Cornelius to Haynes is one of the goals listed in the borough's comprehensive plan. With better internet, that aspiration may be closer to reality. A program to document bats in Southeast Alaska is starting up again this year. Over the last 3 years, the program has been creating a baseline of data in the hopes that a deadly bat virus can be prevented. KFSK's Angela Denning has more.
Over 30 Petersburg residents are gathered at the local library to learn about bats and a volunteer citizen science program. It's coordinated seasonally through the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but relies heavily on local volunteers like Sunny Rice.
So you go out to the end of the road at night, which is just kind of cool because I wouldn't normally drive the Three Lakes Loop Road at night.
Rice participated last year, which meant hooking up acoustic bat equipment to her car and driving slowly down a logging road on Mitcuff Island for about an hour.
When a bat comes, it's really clear what it is. So then you've heard it, and then you could keep driving around, and you're sort of guessing, if you're familiar with where you are, oh, I think there's totally going to be bats here, or maybe there's going to be bats at this place where I go blueberry picking. So it's like a treasure hunt, kind of.
Her results were uploaded into an online database that includes information from surveys all over the region. Southeast Alaska has five main bat species, which mostly roost in trees during the summer days and hibernate through the winter in cracks in rocks, talus slopes, and stumps. But the mothers use maternity roosts that are a little warmer, usually in old-growth snags on the south side of trees. Driving surveys are being done in five communities in Southeast. Over 150 volunteers have recorded over 1,700 bat calls. The surveys found that most bats are little brown bats, except in Sitka, which had more silver-haired bats. Little brown bats were found all along Petersburg's route. The survey found just one hoary bat in the entire region, which was in Haynes last year. Scientists are in a hurry to learn about Alaska's populations because of a fungal disease called white nose syndrome. Since the disease was discovered a decade ago, it's wiped out 7.5 million bats in the lower 48. It irritates the bats, causing them to wake early from hibernation, and then they starve from lack of food. It can also affect the skin of their wings. Bats can't take that kind of pressure because they don't multiply very quickly. The little brown bat, for example, lives for over 30 years, and the females have only one pup per year.
And so we're racing against the clock to try to establish any information we can about bat populations in the event that white nose syndrome comes to Alaska.
That's Tori Rhodes, a scientist with the state. Besides collecting regional data, Fish and Game has partnered with British Columbia on educating the public about bat translocations when bats accidentally hitch a ride in things like rolled-up camping gear or in Christmas trees from farms and end up hundreds of miles away. Rhodes says the bat's most common mode of hitchhiking is by boat.
Given that Southeast Alaska is a very maritime-dependent industry, not just with our cargo, but also with our fishing vessels, a lot of which are docked down in Washington over winter and then come here in the spring. That is where we are most vulnerable, and it isn't too far of a stretch to say that if white nose comes to Alaska, it could very, very, very likely be by way of a stowaway bat on a ship somewhere.
So why care about bats and their populations? Well, one reason is because all of Southeast's bats are major insect eaters. Just one bat can eat 5,000 insects a night. They navigate in the dark using sound or echolocation. They make clicking noises, and those sound waves bounce off objects, letting them know where things are.
So it's going click, 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 click. Oh, there's a bug. Click, 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 click.
That's Steve Lewis with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He's been studying bats for over 20 years. He takes out a little metal box that fits in your hand. This bat detector can translate calls into something that human ears can hear. He asks a boy in the front row to lightly rub his fingers in front of the speaker.
I'm going to divide the sound of your fingers by 8. Let's rub it right in front of there.
The box is used during the driving surveys, attached to the top of the volunteer's car. It records back calls while a GPS tracks the location. Then, Lewis, Rhodes, and their colleagues use the winter months to sift through all of the collected data. The information is uploaded online for the public to view. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Citizen Science Program is also running in Haines. Volunteers can check out the bat monitoring equipment at the public library. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.